This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom.
Save my brother or die trying.
It's luck, Kay.
It's just a curse.
It can be removed.
You're the bitch.
Get down.
The Book of the Damned is a spell book for creating or undoing any kind of damnation there is.
I think this is in code.
Bring me Adia's codex.
I'll break this text right open.
Once I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this.
Dean is not getting any better. If we don't get the mark of his arm, it's gonna eat him up.
Grace, it's been restored.
Find me a cure for my brother, and I'll kill Crowley.
Thank you, Sam, for reminding me who I really am.
There must be something that I don't know about her. Something I could hold over as a bargaining chip.
She's cracked the code.
Smiley.
I don't want to have to hurt you.
I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Hello and welcome to Women of Letters, episode 42, and our review of Brothers Keeper, the season 10 finale for Supernatural. I'm here, joined as always in Squee with Amy. Hello, Amy.
Hello, Jules. Yes, I'm full of Squee for the finale, and I've just, like you, I've just watched it again.
A bit different than the state we were both in last year's finale, where we were grief-stricken and traumatized and sort of had PTSD for months over it.
I was catatonic after last year's finale. It was hard for me to speak.
I still find it a very difficult episode to watch. But
me too.
While equally emotional, very different episode in tone this year. So do we want to hop straight in?
I think we should hop straight in.
I should add in, it was interesting for me. It was the first time ever in 10 years I've actually watched the finale for the first time with other people in the room with me.
Oh, my God, I've never done that.
I know. apologies retrospectively to Karen and Megan, who came over to my place and who had to put up with Jules' rules of watching Supernatural. Which are basically, you shut up now, and aside from strangled sobs, I don't want to keep out of you for the next 43 minutes.
Oh, my God. Well, I didn't watch it.
People had to turn off their phones. I mean, this is serious shit. I don't take anything. Even the dog knows, like, and she gets locked outside if she's as much as farting while it's on. So
I am very serious. I'm very serious about it as well. I had to wait till I got home, and watched it. And I was quite late, and so it was very frustrating. But I was the same. I was like, fed the dog, basically said, I don't want to hear from you. Don't even look at me. I'm watching the finale. I turned everything off and watched it. And then I actually did watch it the next night with Hazel, who came into town for All Hell Breaks Loose, which was last weekend. So we watched it on the Friday night as well, which was really enjoyable. So I got to watch it with someone, but it was like about the third or fourth time that I'd watched it by then.
Well, yes, I had a watch party on the Friday night, at Heads and Hyenas, where we watched it on the big screen and had 20 or 30 people watching it, and that was a lot of fun, and I didn't impose my rules and I didn't need to. So there were people there, probably half the crowd there, who hadn't seen it before.
Wow,
so,
cool. That's cool.
Yeah, there were people who'd come especially because they couldn't wait, even people who weren't coming to the con, who wanted to see it ahead of when it aired on television here.
It was on the Monday, so it was only a few days after. It aired for us on the Thursday, and it aired here in, aired for us via America on the Thursday, and aired in Australia on the Monday.
And it started, of course, as usual, as 9 out of the 10 season finales mm-hmm. have, with Carry On. I always like to point out that in the first season that played in the second last episode, not mm-hmm. the last episode. And it started with the a cappella version from the 200th episode from Fan Fiction, which was absolutely beautiful, and it was a lovely shout back to that milestone that we had this season, which now seems so long ago.
Like, I actually gasped when it started with that. I was like, are they going to do the whole thing to this? And then I thought, no, they're going to somehow segue into Kansas any minute now. But I gasped at just opening with her singing, you know, like that beautiful shot of that actress, I'm not sure her name, who played Mary, singing, just starting off the song. And I was like, oh! And I was already like, oh my God, I'm never going to cope with this. How am I going to cope?
I think any Supernatural fan, you only need to hear those first few notes of Carry On, mm-hmm. and it gets you right in the feels.
So right in the feels.
Right in the feels. Uh-huh. I still remember in the second season when it played over the finale, doing my fist pump and going, we've got a theme song! Oh my God.
I reckon that they did it in that second last episode of season one, and they realised as soon as they'd done it, that they'd gone, oh dear, we should have saved this. Whoopsie! Because, you know, whatever. This I can't even remember what they did in the last episode. It was just amusing.
How much more appropriate a song can you get than Carry On? But
did Kansas Band tweet out to us? Because yes. I know that they did last season. They tweeted out wishing us luck.
I was going to say that, you know, we've come to the point where the band tweets out and loves it. So it was actually Fight the Good Fight was the recap over the season one. Over the season one road so far. Of the season one finale. So, obviously after they did Carry On, they're like, yeah, we should use that again.
Oh,
and, of course, it was so appropriate in the second season, and I think at that point they went, yeah, let's keep doing this. Actually, I should have asked. I spoke to Todd Arena, and I'll have an interview coming up with him soon, and I should have asked him about what – because he's been there since the beginning and was possibly involved in the song choice there. So I must ask him. Note to self. It'd be good to know at what point did they go, oh yeah, Carry On's really, really perfect.
So perfect.
But it was, and wonderful editing on that, on The Road So Far.
I always love The Road So Far. I mean, I love that. Of course I love it, but I love that, you know, with the song and everything, but I love that it's called The Road So Far, and it always starts the same with the little title and then we go into it, and I think it's wonderful that the show has stuck with that for so long, you know.
This whole Road So Far
and Then and Now, you know, is much more interesting than what a lot of other shows do.
Yeah, and it's a nice – I like the way that it's both – it doesn't really recap the season. It's not that structured in the narrative. No. There's usually a lot of killing in it.
Yeah, and it's usually just some really cool scenes.
And then there's usually a couple of little bits from the last few episodes.
Yeah.
You know, the arc over the last, you know, 3 to 6 episodes just setting up the finale. But it doesn't try and tell the whole story of the season. But it distills it down to, you know, and this distilled it down to basically the Mark of Cain.
Yeah.
Which is basically
was the season. The season's bad guy. Was the Mark. Not the Mark Shepherd, the Mark of Cain.
Oh, Mark. who did enjoy food in Australia a lot. Just been marking these selfies. Not so much cardio photos in Australia. Mm. Lots of photos of him and Sarah eating.
So. Yeah. I actually have noticed he's not done as many cardio photos lately. I wasn't sure if it was because he's too busy dating or whether he, you know, Jensen's little dude, with your cardios, I'm going to have to unfollow you. Love you, man.
I suspect it's more difficult when he's traveling and he's seen a lot.
Traveling and yeah, exactly. Eating a lot, as one does when they're happy.
And sad, and everything
in between.
So we open with Sam in the bunker doing something which we're not quite sure what, some bullets, and he has the Charlie's translation of the codex in front of him.
I love her little email, can't talk now.
Yes.
Oh, can't talk now, download this.
And if you look the other emails, one of them was America's best restaurant. So like the sort of crap that you get in your email. That was quite fun. No emails for erectile dysfunction drugs or messages from Nigerian princes. So he's obviously got quite a good spam filter. But one thing I liked, and of course it comes into play at the end of the episode, but he's sitting there, he has those photos of the Winchesters as a young family. So Mary with Sam and Dean and Mary with Dean. Yeah. And I thought that's when you watch it again and you notice those and you just think how and why he's got those there because of how he's feeling, and that's they're the photos he's got next to him to sort of keep his family close to him.
I really loved what he said in that too, when he was saying, we're going to save Dean, and Cass is like, but what about the, you know, consequences? Yeah. He's like, no one can tell me what that is, and I'm not going to let my brother die on a guess. And yes. I just loved that. I was like, yes. I was fist pumping then. I was like, yes, Sam. Like, exactly. Like, we know something bad's going to happen, but no one knows what it is. Everybody's just guessing. And I just loved that he said, I'm not going to let my brother die on a guess. I just thought that was fantastic. I loved that little bit of dialogue.
Well,
there.
And it's a good rational. Like,
it was really rational to me. It was like sensible, and you know, like.
But also, we've had quite a bit of discussion over the last couple of episodes, which I've liked, of making explicit the fact that we all know, all the Winchesters and Cass and everyone knows that, you know, when you use magic or you make these sort of deals, there's always a downside. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Sam's point is he doesn't know what that downside is, so he knows there's a clear benefit, that's saving Dean, and he doesn't know the downside, so that, you know, it's a different decision you make than if you're weighing up two known quantities. He's weighing up something he knows, the benefit of which is immeasurable to him, and something he doesn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You could say that, you know, he can be pretty sure it's going to be pretty shitty, but that's not how emotions work. You know,
no, exactly.
It would be different if it was like, If you do this and save Dean, then
everybody in the world's gonna die or something.
Yes, well,
except
well,
for you actually, and Dean. Wait, that's
actually,
a story.
That's
pretty much what's happening.
Possibly could be what happened, but I like that the fact that they've made a lot of those sort of equations that have played out a number of times in the past. They made them very explicit. Yes, we all know this, and even knowing that, these are the decisions we choose to
make. Still making,
so,
yeah.
But I like that angry exchange that he has with Cass. And, you know, Cass, of course, can't counter that. You know, when Sam says, you know, are you going to kill Dean? You know, I'm not going to kill Dean. It's like getting down to, it's one thing to have theoretical discussions. The other thing is, this is the reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Either one of us has, and even they know that killing him is not going to be easy or even possible.
Impossible.
You know, they're our choices here.
There is no choice.
We lose Dean. Dean becomes this, you know,
unstoppable force.
Or we try and kill him, or we try and save him. So it's pretty sucky, really.
Mm-hmm. That's sucky. And there's really only one choice there for them.
Well, of course.
Of course.
Your one choice. That's no choice at all.
There's no choice at all. Exactly.
Yes, so I did love that scene, and it's a nice part of me wishes, you know, again, you always want more and more and more, and it would have been interesting to see the bit between the fight with Cass and Dean at the end of the last episode. And
yeah, would have liked to have seen Sammy get to the bunker, because he was on his way there. He was motoring to the bunker, and to come there and find Dean's gone and Cass in a bloody pile and bodies all over the place. And yeah, and he's obviously picked up the photos out of the pile of that Eldon was ready to torch.
Yes, so they're a bit smelly with kerosene. So yes, that, but it, and what discussions he and Cass must have had about, you know, what they're going to do at this point in time. And then we cut to Dean, poor Dean, waking up with carpet imprint on his face.
I know, he still looked pretty though. And I wasn't the only one who thought that. I think it was Ryan, wasn't it? Was it Ryan who said, even with his mouth open on the carpet, he still looks good?
Someone commented that. I'm not sure who it was. I'll have to check my Storify for that.
But he's sitting on the bed once he got himself up and sitting and had a swig of something and is sitting on the bed saying, I'm good, I'm good. And you always know it's really, really bad when Dean Winchester says he's good.
Yes.
Because that's his, like, you go, how are you, Dean? And he goes, I'm good. You go, oh, shit, that means he's really bad.
He's not good.
He was so not good.
He was so not good. And that was, in a way, though, that sort of, this is the hard thing, and we see him, you know, as things go through the episode, but you're not sure. We're not sure. We've just seen him, you know, really gripped by the mark at the end of the previous episode when he killed the Steins and when he obviously came very, very close to killing Cass. But, you know, he's now woken up. He seems Dean-ish.
Yeah. He goes to do a case, you know, because he's trying to live with the mark. And he's like Dean with absolutely zero tact.
Well, and also, though, I think it shows that you know, that he's starting to, the mark is starting to make him have no empathy with people. So his comments about the girl being dressed like a whore. And you can tell, I thought it was quite cleverly done, you know, while people are, oh my God, how dare Dean say that? But then the way he reacts to her parents, it's just, he has no empathy with anyone at this point. He's no empathy with Rudy. And a couple of people are like, who's Rudy? He had actually
spoken to Rudy.
Yeah, he'd been spoken to Rudy over the last couple of episodes. So
I think Sam had spoken to Rudy.
Yes. So
Sam and Dean have both spoken to Rudy. Rudy had amazing eyes. Oh my God.
Poor Rudy, we didn't know you for very long.
We didn't know you very long, but I was like, dude, they're the bluest eyes I've ever seen. Jeez. But he obviously wasn't much of a hunter either, because even Dean alluded at the fact that he was like playing at being a hunter. And
well, no, see, I challenged.
You just think Dean was just being an ass.
Yeah, no, I think that was part of Dean, because then later on, when Rudy is on the phone to Sam and we see his weapons cache in his trunk, it's extremely sophisticated. It's well organized. This guy doesn't look like a guy. Like, I'm not saying you can't be neat and organized and still be a terrible hunter, but we don't have any evidence that he's not a good hunter.
That's true. And I guess Sam and Dean have both contacted him in the past for.
Well, actually, it was Dean both times.
Oh, was it Dean both times? Who did Sam? Sam's called somebody as well, a hunter this season. I thought it was Rudy. At some point,
Sam
season.
mentions him, but he.
Oh,
doesn't
there you go. Is it? Okay. I knew Sam said something.
So, you know, the fact that Dean has called him a couple of times, well, if he was that big a loser, he wouldn't have done that. I'm not taking, you know, Dean's word on anything at this point. So I don't, you know, I don't think we know much about Rudy.
And we never will.
Ryan Curtis from the VFX team did try and start a,
bring Rudy back
Rudy hashtag, but to no avail.
No
so
one cared.
But you never know. No one's ever really dead on Supernatural.
I think Rudy's dead.
Come back. could come back. He has reason to be a vengeful spirit if he hasn't moved on, and we don't know what
what the veil's happening.
And what happens to death, so we have no idea.
We really don't know what happens now when you die.
Exactly. So, so yeah, I'd be a little less harsh on what Rudy's actual hunting abilities are, and I reckon anyone who's lived that long can't be totally useless at hunting. I think Dean's just being, unempathetic, yes. Mark-ridden Dean at that point.
He wasn't very nice. Though he was very clued in on that family, though. I mean, I was like, even when he was being, as you said, lacking total empathy in how he dealt with
them. He was still septic.
Totally sussed that family out, yeah.
And cold as steel. Yeah, I mean, cold. Really just chilling his reaction and the way he's dealing with them. But, yeah, absolutely. And, there's a moment when you think he's just going to blow that guy away, and you can tell that the guy's just like, gets that look at Dean's absolutely implacable in that moment. You know, it's just couldn't care what he does. Shout out to the just in terms of direction as well. I love that shot after Dean's left the family's house and he swings around and you get that the gun, pointing sort of straight at the camera as the younger brother of the dead girl appears. And that's one of Phil Segrecia loves shots like that. And it was just
that was a really good shot. I like that too.
Amazing.
Yeah, makes a beautiful GIF. Thanks for that, Phil.
Phil Segrecia serving Tumblr since 2000 and whenever Tumblr started. We should have a special rating of GIF rating of episodes. then, of course, we cut back to Rowena sipping on her cup of tea Sam and Cass turn up, and we find out that what Sam was making at the bunker were witch-killing bullets.
Lovely.
Handy thing to have, because certainly in the history of Supernatural, witches have lived more than any other thing that they've faced. There's only been a rare occasion where they've managed to, disempower a witch or very hard to kill. So it's I hope they keep the hold of that recipe because they might need it in the future. Rowena, look, Ruth Connell has been incredible this season. She probably next to Mark Shepherd in terms of just how, in a small package, there's a big actor and she can just hold her own. And the interactions between her and Sam have been delicious.
They have. I've really, in the last bunch of episodes, I have just completely grown, loved Rowena. I'm just like, every time she's on screen, I think bringing her in with Sam and this whole storyline around the Codex and her interaction with Sam has been wonderful. And for me, it's kind of really taken her character to a place where I'm just like, I love that character every time she's on. I think she's fantastic. So, she sort of went from being, oh, yeah, okay, she's this character, she's pretty fun and stuff, to this, oh, my gosh, I just love her. She's awesome.
She is, and I think it's because we've seen, particularly in the last couple of episodes, her and Sam and a bit of her and Cass and, of course, her and Charlie. Her and Sam together are just great. I know there are a number of members of fandom out there who'd like a bit of Rowena, Sam hate sex. and that is one hell of a height difference.
That's one hell of a height difference.
But she is amazing and she's just so feisty.
She is. She's fabulous.
And, of course, I love the fact that she knows the position of power she's in. And it's something
so bluffy. And it was just like not even a good bluff. It's like you're not going to kill her. She's the only one who can help you. It's just why are you even saying that, Sam? Like we all read straight through that as well. It's like, but it was good to know that he's got witch-killing bullets because he might need them later.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You never know when they could come in handy.
Pretty sure he's going to need them next season.
Yeah. and then of course, Sam gets the phone call from Rudy that about where Dean is, and then one of those scenes where I start laughing because Sam has a little Ziploc baggie of Dean's hair.
So random. I was thinking it's got to be for maybe he's carrying it because he thinks it's needed for the spell. Or, you know, like, so just in case Rowena needs it for the spell, I'm going to carry this little bit of hair.
I'm sure that's why, but the very fact that
at some point weird.
He has collected it, and as a number of people said, you know, what else has Sam got? He's got some toenail clippings and, you know, an old toothbrush and snotty tissue.
Ew.
And, you know, Dean's cum rag, yeah, you know, what's a bodily fluids right is there. He collecting? It's yes, and it wasn't just like a hair.
This no, was, it was a little bag of hair.
So, and I know some of us, my friend Alex was speculating. You know, had they gone into Lebanon to get their hair cut, and as they're leaving, the guy starts sweeping up, and Sam's like, "I'll just grab some of that if you don't
never
mind.
Know when I'm going to need Dean's hair.
I never know when you might need some of your brother's body part."
Got a little bit of DNA. I just need his DNA. Oh my gosh. Now, it was really funny. Here, can you just take this bag of hair? And I was just like, what the hell?
I mean, normally in these sort of shows, when that happens, you see the person sneakily try and cut some while they're asleep or something. But the fact that Sam's, you know, packed and ready to go, this made me laugh.
It was pretty funny. I remember you seeing you tweeting, going, "So does everybody have their siblings' hair in a bag?" Just asking for a friend. Oh gosh.
Oh dear. No, that was that was funny. And then of course, so we have then Dean's confrontation with the vampires, one of which he dispatches very quickly.
Yes.
I
never look at that head chopping off thing again after hearing Jensen talking about how hard it is to chop off heads.
Has he?
Yeah, it must have been in the VIP one. I can't remember, but it was, well, maybe it was in the meet and greet, but it was last weekend, and it was talking about how many times they had to shoot it in a sequence in order to get that shot, you know, and how many times he has to actually, it might have been in the meet and greet, how many times he has to actually chop, you know, to try and get the positioning right, because, like, they have it with the actor, and then obviously they take the actor out because he obviously doesn't actually chop any, oh, it was in the meet and greet, anybody's head off, and then he has to, like, swing in the right spot, and it might take him, like, five goes to swing in that spot, and then they actually have Robin comes in, apparently, with something like a, and throws it on the floor, like the fake head, and there's, like, it all kind of, he said it's like about six different shots in order to get that shot. So anyway, that was in the main grid. So when I saw that, just watched it this afternoon, I was like, hey, I know how they do that now. Thank you, Jensen.
Well, Jensen is adept at decapitation at this point in his career. Good. I remember maybe it was on a location tour. It might have been when we went to Purgatory, and Russ Hamilton talking about, you know, the fact that Jensen was very accurate with his swings and could do it into the same mark on the tree, you know, sort of again and again. So, well trained in weaponry, Jensen is.
Yes, he is very well trained in weaponry.
He did a slight segue here, talk in Sydney, I think it was, about his desire to use the rocket launcher, which is in the – or grenade launcher, which is in the Impala's trunk. And every
still
season –
still hasn't got to use it.
Yeah, every season's like, so maybe now Dean can use the rocket launcher.
Get the rocket launcher out. No, I get a knife.
No, I – it would be maybe next season. Mm-hmm. Let's put it out there. I think they might need it. I was pleased to note Rudy had a couple of hand grenades in his little neat little box. So.
Yeah, that's true. He did.
And I want to know is, I suppose I'm going to stop myself before I even go any further because it's America. I was going to say, you know, is there someone, I was going to try and be funny and say someone who makes those suitcases with the weapons, with the foam and the, you know, pieces cut out, but it's America. You can probably buy them on Amazon.
Yeah, you probably can.
But yeah, so we have that confrontation, and aside from noting it was that Rudy called Dean Dino, so he deserved to die. I just could hear fandom going, "Oh, sorry, you've called him Dino. Look, you know,
you're dead.
We lost our shit over Cole doing that, and we don't even know you that well, so you're out of here.
You're out. Why is everybody calling Dean Dino all of a sudden?
I don't know. It's sort of trying to be chummy.
I don't know.
It's, didn't work. It never, did not work for him. Well. Never ends well.
The chumminess thing did not happen.
No.
And that girl really lost it. He didn't even... Just she was like mumbling back and mumbling to herself in the ambulance out the back,
which was good. I liked the
I like that too.
She had totally lost it, and also then that Sam sort of spaces out and is just sort of.
I love that noise too. It was almost like a Mark of Cain drone, you know, he didn't even hear anything. He's just like this noise in his head as he saw what his brother was responsible for.
Not good. And then, of course, we cut to Dean having sort of, you know, speaking of having just seen Mad Max, as we were off air, having his sort of flashes of both bloodied Cass and bloodied Rudy in the mirror, and then taking out his rage on his old enemy, the motel room lamps.
Yeah, and chairs. And
we know he hates motel room lamps.
He's beaten them up before.
They're foes from long back, and he let loose on that. And I mean, again, it's a wonderful to not that we don't need, or the show doesn't feel it needs to have that dialogue of Dean telling someone. We know from those couple of images that this is about, you know, he's angry, he's upset, he's fresh, like
feeling
he's
guilty,
now
and
at
he's getting
all
eaten.
That.
He's
all
got
that.
Everything, yeah. Everything flowing through him.
What can he do at this point? And obviously he does something that, you know, he sees as his only outlet at the moment, which is to call death.
And can I just also, if I can just be, you know, typical me in the talking about the hotel beating up, I would like to thank Wardrobe for allowing Dean to do that just in the black T-shirt. Well, and jeans as well, but, you know, yeah. I thought that was...
It would have been better if it was just black
T-shirt. Just the black T-shirt would have been awesome, but no, I was very... I was like, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you thinking of us all.
Well, that was obviously a sign of, you know, his extreme distress that he'd taken off the...
Red shirt.
Flannel, the red shirt of doom.
Because he has the red shirt with the black T-shirt, which I was going to ask Jensen last weekend, but I didn't. I asked a different question because, you know, that has become like the Mark of Cain or Demon Dean.
Yes, because he wore that at the beginning of the season as well. So
and there was and every time that the Mark of Cain is kind of getting its talons into him, he wears his red shirt and black T-shirt. So it's like
obviously,
a wardrobe decision.
I was going to say, the Mark of Cain also drives your fashion choices.
I'm feeling really pissed off today. I'm going to wear my red shirt.
Feeling a bit murdery.
Red shirt it is.
Where's my murder shirt? You're just about to reach for plaid and the Mark of Cain takes over your hand.
I need my murder shirt.
You pull out the murder shirt. we do cut, though. We've got... you know, Rowena goes through then, we cut to Rowena going through what the requirements are for to get rid of the Mark of Cain, which turn out to be some rather impossible sounding ingredients, including the apple from the Tree of Knowledge in the Garden of Eden, the golden calf, and something, and possibly the most impossible thing of all, something that she loves.
Which I actually really love, jumping ahead to the fact when we found out what the something that she loved was just the barista guy from the week before. I was like, nice. I just thought Crowley was getting a coffee and possibly trading a set, you know, trying to pick up a soul. But actually, this was the guy that the hamster told him about. And that was a sentence
exactly.
I never thought I'd say.
Only on Supernatural, the hamsters play key plot parts.
But yeah, I thought that was really cool. I was like, oh man, that was awesome.
It was actually. I really liked that, and I thought I thought that was a good reveal that we had.
Really
there.
Good. Really good. And Crowley walking in and just going and blowing everything up and killing everybody just in, like, was really good.
Really want a coffee.
Yeah, boy, I don't think he needs any more coffee after that. But no, I like Crowley being, you know, really evil. Again, he went through a bit of a not so evil stage. I like him back being evil again.
Don't we all?
Yes. Yes, we do.
But of course, and then we have Cass obviously has a great idea to actually enlist Crowley's help in this. And calls him at the crossroads, and we get the wonderful line of, you know, summoning? Who does that anymore?
You're not in my context. That was a very good line. But you're not in my context. Oh, God love him. I love Crowley and Cass together. They're so fun.
It was, and I realised we haven't had much of this season, and it was great to see them together. And it immediately, when I do, it brings back, you know, the huge history they've got together as well.
Yeah.
And they do play well together. So I hope. We'll get to that, to where they end up at the end of the episode. Yes, I could certainly take a few more scenes of them together.
Yes, me too. Absolutely.
And Crowley going for the whole, well, you know, you can kill me or you can beg. And again, we have
people. Yeah, he was really crap at begging.
Yeah. But it's interesting, both, you know, Rowena and Crowley know in this that they're in a position of power, mm-hmm. because they've got something that the others want.
I just loved Cass's begging, though. It was just like I could almost see him rolling his eyes, oh my God, as he's begging. And it's like the worst begging I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't know that would really pass muster as begging.
I don't think so. It was really good. It was. I loved that scene. I thought that scene was fab.
Yes, I did too. It was very wonderful. And then we go back, of course, to Sam gets to the poor, devastated motel room.
Oh, and finds the note on the bed that Jensen wrote on the bonnet of the Impala.
Which we know because he tweeted of someone, took a photo, and Jensen tweeted it.
That's right. And he took the time to write the note that Dean would write on the Impala.
That was
pretty spectacular. I thought that he chose, that for him to do that, I think, was really, for Jensen to actually go, okay, I've got to write this note from Dean giving away the Impala to Sam. He would probably, you know, like, and actually leaning on the Impala to write it. I thought that was pretty amazing. Once we found out what that note was.
Yeah. Of course, we're saying he did it there as part of a character choice. It could have just been because
he was leaning on
because
it.
Because he was standing there when someone gave him a pen.
I reckon he did it as part of, he could have written in his trailer. He could have, you know, like, I reckon he did that as part of what character that note was. Yeah. Yeah.
I believe that.
Even though he was dressed as Jensen at the time.
Or was he?
Yeah, he was. He was in a blue denim shirt, I'm pretty sure.
No, but I mean, maybe Dean had changed his clothes briefly.
Oh, well, maybe. Briefly. Out of the murder shirt. Into the note-writing shirt.
You're going to call it the murder shirt from now on now,
aren't
you?
Yes, I am.
We're all going to call it the murder shirt because that's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then we get that. So of course we have. Then we cut to Dean and Death. And as you and I were saying, once you've seen Julian Richings doing karaoke, it just gives Death a whole new dimension.
It really does. And he's such a nice dude. He's so sweet, and his panels are nice. He's lovely in photo ops, and then he's Death. And it's a little bit hard to wrap your head around. But he's wonderful. Death is wonderful.
Oh, isn't he, though?
Like, wonderful character.
What an absolutely incredible incredible casting that was. And, of course, you know, back in season 5, and no one thought, I'm sure, that Death would be recurring as a character. And they've used him sparingly. And his scenes, I can't, like, there's just sometimes when you're watching, and certainly Julian and Jensen's scenes together, I mean, Julian just on his own, and he has a very long monologue in this initial scene with Dean. He's an exquisite actor. You just, and he's one of those people who can carry, you know, and this is a mythology heavy monologue that could become garbled nonsense in the hands of a lesser actor, and he just does it so well. And his, you know, the relationship they've developed with Dean and Death, the whole food thing, like the offering and the fact that, though it's always, you know, it's quirky food that you know, like the pickled chips that's always offered.
They're awful. I tried them when I was in Texas. I'm like, I'm going to try pickled chips when I was in a bar in Austin. And I was like, oh, my God, they're so not good. I love that Dean cooked all that food himself.
Oh, my God, that was amazing.
The man is amazing.
The man is amazing. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I thought that was a lovely extra touch.
With all the bad fat.
With all the bad fat. So he had queso taquitos and tamales. Now, I have to say, certainly tamales on their own, but all, are difficult and time-consuming to make. So actually all three of them are. Queso's not that hard to make. It's hard to make well. But, like, I just the thought of Dean's, like, he's found an abandoned Mexican restaurant. He's bought supplies.
It's a nice Mexican restaurant as well.
Yeah, and made, but it's abandoned.
I know, but it had,
out in the middle of nowhere.
It had some nice furnishings still in there.
Yeah. That it's out, you know, that he's made this food for Death. I mean, that is just, that's our show.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty spectacular.
It's very spectacular. I just adored that. I thought it was so.
I really loved the expansion on the Mark of Cain mythology.
Before there was light, before there was God and the archangels, there wasn't nothing. There was the darkness, a horribly destructive, amoral force that was beaten back by God and his archangels in a terrible war. God locked the darkness away where it could do no harm, and he created a mark that would serve as both lock and key, which he entrusted to his most valued lieutenant, Lucifer. But the mark began to assert its own will, revealed itself as a curse, and began to corrupt. Lucifer became jealous of man. God banished Lucifer to hell. Lucifer passed the mark to Cain, who passed the mark to you, the proverbial finger in the dike.
Well, that is just fan-freaking-tastic, isn't it?
I thought that was spectacular because it not only was it incredibly clever and so interesting and took the Mark of Cain back to be something else altogether and, you know, reveal that it's a lock for the darkness. But also it gives Lucifer's, like, it wasn't my fault attitude a whole nother level. Because
of course, it wasn't. He was under the influence of the mark.
Someone needs to tell Mark Pellegrino.
Oh,
They do. He will love that. He will absolutely love that because he never thought Lucifer's a bad guy.
No. And it turns out
he's not.
He wasn't.
He was under the mark of Cain, under the influence of the mark of. Well, it was previously the mark, the lock. I don't know what you wanted to call it.
There must be a key. That's what I also flashed to. I'm like, oh my God, this is just tying in with everything.
Oh my gosh. But I just thought that was really cool mythology. Yeah. It was a really cool expansion on what we know about the Mark of Cain and how it came about and how it got transferred onto Cain. But it also put a whole nother twist on a character, which Lucifer is to us in our show, and his opinion of how he was hard done by and, you know, not loved by his dad and he didn't deserve it. I mean, he's in the end of the end, you know, he says, tell me, does the punishment fit the crime? Well, he, you know, maybe he might have been remained God's favorite had he not been, you know, the person God's, who got
God's
the
fault for
it's
making
all God's
not,
fault.
It's God's fault for not making a very good lock and key.
Yeah, for making a lock that makes you really angry. he could have worked a different way to do that. Putting a lock on his favourite.
Oh, yes.
But I thought that was fabulous. I was, like, just enthralled by that new mythology.
Yep. No, absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. It was, and again, I could watch that scene with Jensen and Julian, and I'd love to hear both of them talk about that because I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
So wonderful. And then, of course, we have the phone call between between Sam and Dean. Oh. Brother, I'm done.
Brother, I'm done. Oh, my God. Wow. That was like that was the worst. You know, and he's talking about how hard he's tried. He's really, really tried to live with the thing and do the right thing. And brother, I'm done. And I was just like, the brother, I'm done. I just was like, oh, God. Now I'm done.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking. Thank you, Dean.
I was thinking, no, I'm done.
We're all done now. Thank you. Oh, my gosh. It was such a... And Sam's so desperate. Whatever you're doing, whatever you don't do it, Dean, don't do it. You know, oh, it's time to say goodbye. And I was like, oh, my God, shut up.
And then God knows what Sam's thinking when he arrives and you know,
Death standing there.
And of course, you know, Sam's like, don't do it. And Dean's like, well, it's not my death, it's yours. Bum, bow.
Bum, bow, bow. And I was like, what? Yeah, it was pretty. And I was like, oh, I just sat there. This whole coming scenes as they banter back and forth, which, you know, I'm getting ahead of, but I just sat there with my heart in my mouth through the rest of the episode until the end when I sort of cheered a little bit, which is random, but I did.
Yes. but yeah, look, I think it's an amazing, both that, you know, the whole discussion here and how it develops. I have to have a shout out. I love the sort of the beginning of the explanation. There's a few funny moments because there's like Sam's like, he's going to send you to outer space.
I know, that was great. Why didn't say outer space?
Supernatural.
I love Dan. Why didn't say outer space? No, and I just burst out laughing, which felt like such a strange place to burst out laughing, but it was just so cool.
And then the whole, and if I get rid of it, then the darkness will be the release. What's the darkness? Well, nothing good, obviously. Like, I've got time to tell you, but let's just... It's called the darkness, Sam.
So, for a reason, you know.
Yeah, it's not called sparkly rainbow stuff.
That would be awesome.
It would be, but that's not the Winchesters are ever going to run into.
I know, but that would have been fun to watch flow over the Impala at the end.
Maybe that final scene, some sort of unicorn jizz over the Impala.
That's like twice now you've...
What? Oh, I've made jizz jokes. One was Dean's, which possibly is rainbow and sparkly.
I think it might be.
It might be as well, or is that Jensen's? Anyway, moving on.
Same.
But then, you know, then we get to the serious shit. Dean and Sam, both actually speaking the truth. You know, bad things happen around them. You know, they've both done things that are terrible, and Sam countering with, you know, but we've done good and you are a good man. And I just love the fact I saw them both as they're both speaking the truth. And I think that's where the punch comes from too. I had a long discussion with the people I was with about who felt that sort of came out of nowhere. And I think I said the frustration.
I think they both said that before.
Yeah, and it's that frustration of, like, this is an argument no one can win. Like, it's not you're right or I'm right. It's just the place they're both in is different but the same, and that there is no way. You know, Sam doesn't want Dean to die. Dean doesn't want to kill everyone. Dean's in this place where he could murder the world. So, you know, he's not seeing himself as good sparkly person. and rainbows at the moment.
I just I just love that. Everything that Sam said in these scenes, I love, because as you say, it's true, you know, they have done some pretty bad stuff as well. And they, you know, like, and they always, and they do it with good intentions, but sometimes their good intentions start the apocalypse and, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, as you said, I was looking at it thinking both their arguments are actually pretty sound. They don't mean to do shitty things, but sometimes they do shitty things that, you know, have catastrophic outcomes. But yes, essentially what Sam was saying was right, you know, that they are always trying to do good and they're always trying to do right. And I think Sam in that final scene, to me, embodied Sam in season 10 for me, who, yeah. I mean, I've always loved Sam, you know, obviously I love Sam Winchester, but I have been in love with Sam Winchester in season 10. He has been this beating heart, I think, of the brothers, yeah. And he has never given up, and he has always believed in Dean, and all this kind of stuff that we've always wanted with between them, he has been flowing out of him, and just to see him stand there and go, "You are a good man, and I am never going to." Well, he was lying down when he said this, but I am never going to say that you're anything but a good man.
Yes,
I was like, Sam Winchester, you're unbelievably beautiful, and I thought it was wonderful. I thought both their speeches were fantastic, but the way that Sam was like, "No, you know, I can't see you like that, and I won't see you like that because that's not who you are, because I know who you are," and I thought that was wonderful.
Which really, you know, and it for me harked back to, you know, the same thing Sam had said in, Point of No Return.
Well, this scene was very much like Point of No Return, and in my sketchy notes that I made before we had our podcast this morning, this afternoon, Jules, this morning, I don't know what the hell, I actually didn't make a note of that. Was that I felt that this scene between Sam and Dean, you know, Dean going to give himself over to Michael, Dean giving himself over to death, and then there was a moment which was came out of their love, essentially, of Dean looking into Sam's eyes and seeing Sam and seeing how much Sam trusts him and loves him. You know, in Point of No Return, it was like, "I can't believe you actually took me there." You know, like, you trusted me and believed in me that much, you took me there. And in this moment, it's like you love me that much that, you know, you're willing to do this for me to ensure that I don't become this awful thing on the world and that I can pack myself away. I thought it was a real Point of No Return moment, and also sort of a swan song moment with the green man, the army man and the photos. I thought it was a really nice tie that,
to Dean in earlier on in Point of No Return, when he's letting Dean out of Bobby's panic room and says, you know, "I just trust that when push comes to shove, you'll make the right call."
Actually, says when push shoves, which I always thought was weird.
It's possibly meant to be when push comes to shove.
But I know, but he goes, "When push shoves." When push shoves, and I was going, "Wow, that's a different way of saying that." Sorry.
But yeah, it's that similar.
It is, moment. It was a really similar thing.
Implacable, unshakable under
belief
everything else.
In his big brother.
Dean, his big brother will do the right thing.
Close your eyes. Sammy, close your eyes. Take these, and one day, when you find your way back, let these be your guide. They can help you remember what it was to be good, what it was to love.
Thank you.
And it's interesting. I mean, I liked the layer of ambiguity over that. Now, I don't believe that, you know, I think it is that moment after Sam's speech and the photos that when Dean, you know, has that revelation then. But there's enough ambiguity to think, you
was
know.
Was he always feeling that way?
Well, at what point did he, you know, was it when Sam walked in or, you know, was there a longer, and, we're not going to get an answer to that.
Well, we could ask Jensen maybe, but. He might have a way that he played it, but I 100% agree with you. I thought that as well. I think that, you know, you can look at it and think that there was that moment with the photos and Sam's unwavering belief that's where Dean sort of, he's tearing up, he's looking at his brother who nods and kind of goes, I'm ready to do this. And I think that's the moment. But I also thought exactly the same thing. I thought, was this something that he formulated earlier? You know, was this something that as soon as Death said, you're going to have to kill Sam, you know?
Yeah.
Dean was like, well, that ain't going to happen, you know. And so I had exactly the same thing. There was ambiguity there that you didn't know when that decision came, when his change of heart or that decision about killing Death instead of killing Sam came. But, you know, I think we're supposed to think it came in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. And we got a perfect tear
from Sam, and it was jiggity jaggedy. It was a really interesting angled one.
It was.
I have watched this many times. It went.
Oh no! So have I.
In like a little. Yeah, it was really. You know, I know. Oh my god, that is so beautiful. I was just like dying, and I was sitting there thinking. I was screaming at my television. I really, really get worried about what my neighbours must think on Thursday nights in Australia when I'm watching Supernatural. Because I was, at this time, I'm like, he can't do it. And I've kind of have always believed that the show will never take us to that point. Because for one of the brothers to kill the other, it crosses a line that they've both said that they will never do. And they've both been faced with having to do it. And they've both, you know, like Dean was supposed to kill Sam in season two. And I mean, when he was born under a bad sign, when he was possessed by Meg, you know, he could have actually done it then. It looked like he'd gone over. So, you know, we've been faced with this before, or whether it's the, you know, the apocalypse or whatever, we've been faced with this before. But I've always kind of thought, one brother will never kill the other, because that's kind of like their line in the sand, is that what they can't do. So I was really panicking, because I was thinking, is the show going to take me over that line that I think we can never cross and come back from? Well, I'm sure we come back from it, but you know, like that I feel like we should never cross. Are they going to actually take me over that? And I thought, what if they're like, he swings the scythe and then we go to black and we don't know what happens? You know, what if that's the cliffhanger? Kill me now, because like I won't be able to deal with that. I'm glad I wasn't the only one thinking that.
Afterwards, I wasn't breathing at the time, so I wasn't thinking much. But afterwards, I was thinking, yeah, there are a few places it could have finished, and that would have been.
Can you imagine? I would have died. Can you imagine 5 months of the fandom not knowing whether Dean kills Sam? Nah. We would have just never got out of our chairs again. We would have. My God.
Yes, but we didn't get that.
No, we didn't.
Dean swinging that scythe round and getting Death. Now, whether Death is dead or not, I've had many a conversation about, and I think that's yet to be determined, whether he's actually dead or temporarily not around or whatever.
Well, what happens if you kill Death? I mean, does someone else step up? Like, is there a Reaper in the background who goes, "Yeah, I've been waiting for the big job for all this time. You know, I'm going to step up and be the guy."
The feeling was, you know, again, the vague mythology we know about Death is that he's as old as God, and that he's you know, if you like, a deity in his own right and has that power. So,
and I mean, he always said he could reap God. So, which he said in season five, over pizza, when we first discovered he liked bad food.
good food.
But really good food. When, you know, I heard some people going, how can you possibly kill Death? And I was like, well, Death said he could kill God. So I kind of feel like if Death can reap God, then Death is capable of being killed as well. But yeah, I think there's two things, whether he is actually dead or not, or whether, you know, who knows what that is. I mean, who knows what was happening in that moment. And if he is, what the hell does that mean?
Well, it, you know, part of it ties into a path I feel the show's been on actually since seasons probably seven, but some people would think earlier even, is that, you know, Sam and Dean themselves are moving into, you know, sort of mythological status. Mm. They're not your ordinary
dancers
anymore. They've, you know, as we know, they've played fast and loose with actually being dead or alive or in hell or purgatory or heaven.
Which
themselves.
I actually thought kind of played into how Death was them. It was with them in this episode, because I felt there was a little bit of comeuppance coming out of Death. I felt like he was like, "You guys, you know, have screwed me over so many times. You have pissed me off. You have died and come back. You've screwed the natural order. You've disrespected me, and now I'm going to make you wear it." And I really felt like there was a little bit of this kind of finally I get to make you pay sort of thing from Death in this moment,
which is a lot more of you know, to go to Greek mythology, that's a lot more of the sort of relationship you see between the gods and the heroes in Greek mythology. So with, you know, Hercules and Jason and the like, is you have that relationship, and of course some of the heroes are sort of have a part god paternity or whatever, because Zeus was always going around, you know, raping swans and women and things.
Swans? That's disturbing.
But, yeah, I do feel that I've been feeling for a while that, you know, Sam and Dean were moving into this realm of, you know, they're not just a couple of ordinary Joes.
No,
you know,
far from it.
And I think, you know, this, you know, because people were like, oh, how could Dean kill Death? He's just a guy. And it's like, well, no, they're not.
Well, they're
not
vessels, and he could kill angels and look at him and kill.
At the time, he's got the mark as well. Let's not forget that. So he still has the mark at that point. So he is, you know, the father of murder. He has the, as we now know,
he has death thing.
He has the power of the darkness behind him.
Oh, yeah. So, and he's got death's stick thing, his scythe thing. I did say it right before. But he, you know, which we don't know what power that wields.
Yes.
It was Death's very own. You know, I love that he had that. My God.
Interesting to see whether, what the state of Death is, what it means.
And what it
means. Now for the natural order of things.
Oh, my God.
Or the unnatural order of things. You know, we know that, you know, we still don't know how put to right things are after the angels falling, even though heaven's sort of slightly open for operations.
We don't know what's happening in the veil.
No, so there's a lot of unknowns there. Then, of course, we cut back to Rowena Crowley and Cass. Crowley, of course, has bought Oscar, their friendly barista and 300-year-old Polish peasant boy. in for Rowena's spell.
Aww.
And, of course, you know, Crowley's motivation here, obviously, is that he's hoping this is something that's going to break Rowena, something terrible. He's going to win either way, because either she's going to kill him and that's going to hurt her, or she won't kill him because she loves him and that gives him power. I did love the speech Crowley had, though, about realising that you know, that wasn't that Rowena couldn't love, it's that she couldn't love him. And
I love that.
Good to throw some mummy issues in with all the daddy issues in this show.
As well. No, I love that as well. And you know, like, yeah, I felt bad for Crowley. I couldn't help but sort of go, oh, God, that's really sucky that you realise it's not that your mother can't love, she just can't love you. That's pretty bad. So I love that as well. And yeah, I love that realization of Rowena's when she realized it was her Polish 8-year-old boy that she had, you know, the only thing she's ever loved in this world.
Yes,
was that child. And it was interesting to see her like embrace him and sort of tell him it's all going to be okay and then jab him in the neck. I was like, oh my God. I was like, yeah, it was,
I didn't doubt for a moment that Rowena was going to do that, but
as we found out, I think she had a bigger plans in action anyway, but.
Oh yes.
You know, playing possum, another Crowley playing possum, another one of them, but. Yeah, I thought that was pretty full on brutal, and this show's really bloody sometimes, you know, you sit and I was like, wow. That's squirting blood. And I sit there and I think, would that really happen? Would it really look like that? I can't help myself. Would that really look like that?
Oh, I'm sure someone's done the research.
Oh, I'm sure they have as well. And I absolutely loved it when she, and I know we'd seen it in the trailer, but it felt so much more impactful in the episode when Rowena had the blood of the young Polish boy and she cast a spell, and when it exploded and they just went boom back from the table and like flew backwards.
Yes.
All of them. I loved that scene, and it had been in the trailer, but to see it actually happening in the spell and her face like, oh, here it comes. It was all very Raiders of the Lost Ark or something. And then they just like explode and they go flying, which I thought was fantastic. I love that. And then the lightning.
Yes. And then, of course, it's zipping up and zipping over.
And the boys are like, what? What's that? Which that noise we can hear coming? That can't be good.
And Dean, you know, and if you like, not, no, like he's finally getting rid of the mark, even though it's like, is it too, like, what does that mean? Is it too late? Now we know now we know what the cost is. You know, what the darkness is going to be released. And I love Sam's
optimistic Sam.
Oh, everything's fine. Looks like everything's
you
fine.
Think?
You got your car back, and it's like,
and nothing bad happened. And Dean's like, really?
I think I killed Dan.
I love how he says fantastic. I love that Dean says fantastic. I'm like, how are you? Fantastic. I think I'm fantastic. I love how he said it. I think I killed Dan. But I love that too. I love that they came out and Sam's like, nothing bad happens. You've got your car back. Everything's right with the world. And Dean's like, oh, I have a feeling that that's not really the case.
Oh, God, where do we go next? And then we go back to, let's go back to Crowley.
Oh, that was so
and,
cool.
Ruth, et cetera. So, of Ruth. Course, Ruth, et cetera.
Ruth.
Rowena. And dead Oscar. But,
oh,
you know,
poor dead
then
Oscar.
We then, of course, find out that, Rowena.
Playing possum.
A bit like Crowley with mm-hmm, Sam the previous mm-hmm, week, mm-hmm. A little bit more powerful than
yep.
we thought.
And so she was obviously just, as I keep saying, she's playing Sam and we don't know why. We're assuming she's got something and it's probably about the codex. And, of course, that was exactly what she was doing.
Yeah.
Yes, sure, she can help get the Mark of Cain off Dean, which in the long run plays to her benefit anyway.
Well, yes, because no one wants the father of murder running around.
No,
but
exactly. And then on the flip side, she is powerful. She was always powerful enough since she can just walk out with the codex.
Yeah.
Which is now. So now we have an extremely powerful witch with the Book of the Damned and what exactly she needs to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And do every spell in it.
And then, of course, you know, her parting gift is that she puts her hex on Cass, which we've seen her use before, to get her to attack Crowley, who is immobilized by her.
and it finishes with us not knowing. And, I mean, of course, the fact is it finishes with Crowley, I mean, Castiel coming at Crowley with an angel blade. We don't know where that's going. But the other thing is everybody else we've seen her put that particular whammy on has died.
Yep. It's not a good thing for either of them.
No.
Anyone.
Meanwhile, back at the Mexican restaurant.
Mark Shepherd had a great time.
Oh, God. He just kept saying he was dead. Pretty much means he's
Mark,
not.
Mark. You're dealing with us.
We know.
You can't play us this way.
Pish tosh. Exactly. But I do love that we were left like that, not knowing. But obviously, so, I mean, something is going to happen with the darkness and something, I don't know. But it was also, for me, it was like, well, we don't know what's going to happen to Cass either, because that particular spell.
I will point out, just to make everyone extra anxious, that we haven't had it announced whether Mark and Misha are season regulars in season 11.
Which I love that they haven't announced that, because so, we don't, because it leaves the cliffhanger. So, because if they announce that, it's like, oh, nuts. Well, now we know. So, I hope that they don't announce that. That'll make everybody sweat, but it mean it'll it plays into that story really nicely.
Oh.
I'm sorry, that's
and
evil.
Then, of course, Sam's momentary optimism.
I was so optimistic. Gosh. I just loved how optimistic he
After 20 seconds, when suddenly the sky starts having sparkly pink lightning, and holes open up in the earth, and the darkness spills forth.
And how freaking amazing did that look? I was, by this point in time, I was screaming because, one, Dean didn't kill Sam. The mark of Cain's off his arm, woohoo! You know, and he was instantly Deany. I thought that was a really amazing transition that Jensen managed to do in those split seconds. Yeah, he went from being Mark of Cain Dean to Dean Winchester. And it was just like this extraordinary, subtle change in him that you suddenly realised it was Dean again. Just something in his eyes. It was really amazing. And all of that was wonderful, and I was yelling, and the boys are together. Oh, my God, we're going to end a season where they're not fighting, or one's not over here, and one's over there, or one's dead, or one's in purgatory. Or you know, they're actually together, and I didn't believe Sam's optimism for one second, but, you know, at least they're standing together, and that's a way better position than we've had them in for a long time. And then this darkness thing happens, and it was so beautiful that I was screaming at my television because it was fabulous. What a brilliant work. What brilliant work they did on that. And I know that they pulled that out of their butts really close to date. And, you know, they didn't have a lot of time to work on these episodes. But it was stunning. I mean, the lightning was stunning.
Because they shot the finale.
Oh, that's true.
At 21, they had actually had that longer than they would normally have the finale. So
that's
they
true,
would
but
have
they
been
had
able
other,
to...
episode, other episodes to work on as well, though. Yes, but true. But it looked amazing with the lightning hitting the ground and then the boof when the darkness shot out like that. And I loved that it looked like demon smoke because I thought that was really interesting.
Sort of tying into the broader mythology there.
Yeah. And I really liked that. It was very cool.
I think you related it last week, but you might want to mention again a bit. Jensen talked about the filming of that final scene with the Impala in the pothole.
Oh yeah, well he's what he wants to happen, is that what you're asking me?
No. They had some difficulty during the filming.
Oh, I didn't recount that. That must have been on Saturday.
Oh, okay. So there was.
You recount that.
I'll recount that even though I wasn't there. That must have been...
Oh, it must have been in Saturday's meet and greet.
It must have been Saturday's meet and greet he talked about. So they had two exciting things. One was a lot of that footage, very high aerial footage, was taken by a camera mounted on a drone. Mm. So that's amazing. First time they've ever used it on the show.
They were all very excited about that, weren't they?
Yes. The other thing was they had the biggest crane you can get with a camera mounted on top, which is apparently like $500,000 piece of equipment. It's hugely expensive. So the idea was that as they go back into the pothole, then the camera would go up and, the wheel spins and you get the shot down on the Impala as the darkness arrives. And you can read, it's Red Tickell's link is on the wiki. You can read her recounting of it. But there was a miscommunication.
She has an amazing memory.
Yes, and there was a miscommunication. And Jensen, you know, it was one of those things where he had to make a split-second judgment of whether to rev the car and possibly end up splattering, you know, mud all over this, you know, $500,000 camera, or, you know, after he's driven the Impala back and had to sort of land on a pin to get it in the exact place in the right hole. And it was just one of those things where you'd go, oh my God, something that you don't even think about all the logistics involved in making that one thing happen, you know, and all the things that have to work and everyone, you know, the number of people involved that had to make split second decisions, and even more so when, you know, something didn't work when it should have.
And it was interesting too. I think that I don't know if you. I'm sure you did see. There was a lot of footage from one of the paparazzi up there who gets you know, finds set and takes the footage of them pushing the Impala out of a ditch and back out again. So I assume that was probably that scene and pushing it in and out.
Oh, okay.
Out of the hole. I don't know, but. I just remember seeing all this footage of them having to get the Impala back out of a hole and to reset a shot. But, yeah.
Oh, baby. Oh, you did well. You did well.
I hope she's not on her roof again when we see her next.
And then we ended the season in the perfect situation with everyone yelling at their TV screens.
I know, but then the brothers beside themselves. And I have to say, like, it was random, but this was probably the happiest I've been after season finale, but a really long time.
We know they're not both going to die, but, you know, they are sort of on the same page. We can ignore for the moment the fact that the mark is likely to have some lingering effects on Dean. We can ignore for the moment Cass and Crowley are about to kill each other. But we can ignore for the fact that the most ancient evil in the universe has been released and go, oh, the boys are in baby together.
But the boys are together and they're on the same page and they're fighting side by side, and we just haven't had that for a really long time, and I have to say, like, a lot of people were like, oh my god, that was devastating, I'm heartbroken. I was like, oh my god, I was running around my house going woo! I was like so excited by the end of this finale. I loved this finale and I loved the end. I loved the effects. I loved the big black cloud rolling over them. I loved that the last thing we heard was Sam screaming out Dean. I loved everything about the end of this finale. I thought, and I love that Dean doesn't have the mark of Cain anymore. I know he's probably going to have some residual, but at least the damn thing's off his arm. And I like that we got that closure on that. I mean, that's a two-season arc, and I was happy to get closure on that.
Yeah.
Not that I was sick of it or anything, but I thought it was great to get that closure and to start a new cycle, a new mythology next season, which I'm super excited about. I felt strangely optimistic at the end of it, which is ridiculous because we're going to come in and it's going to be something horrible is we're going to kick off the season with. But all I could think was, at least they're together. You know, one's not dead or dying and needs an angel stuffed in it or in him, or one's not in purgatory or, you know.
Although, of course, we had Jensen's suggestion that he said he'd suggested to the writers how season 11 could start, which was that the black smoke rolls back and one of the brothers is gone.
Which it could well happen. And destroy.
Shut up, Jensen.
Shut up, Jensen. Don't you know? Which is hilarious because he's always going on about, I want the brothers to be together again. I love the brothers together. Cool. But wouldn't it be really cool if one of them was gone? It's like, no, that's against everything you keep saying. Please be consistent, Jensen.
Part of his rationale was also that it turns out after, you know, four or five episodes, it's Dean's been on a beach somewhere with Crowley serving him cocktails, which probably works out well for Jensen. And
Jensen just
him
wants
coming
a holiday.
Back with a tan,
an but, extra long summer. Bless him. But yeah.
Yes.
But it was, it was wonderful. And I thoroughly enjoyed the season finale. And I'm really also excited by. So many baddies are still out there, apart from the darkness.
We've got Benetron out there. We've got Rowena out there. You know, we don't know what's happened with Death, but he's going to be pretty pissed if he's still around.
Cross. And really, we know that Dean killed a lot of the Steins, but he probably didn't kill them all.
We don't know that either. And, of course, there's still, you know, the usual run-of-the-mill monsters out there.
And we still never picked up with Gavin, so he's still out there screwing with the timey-wimey stuff.
quite possibly. Maybe he will come into play with Ruth next. Sorry, I keep calling Ruth.
No, you do. It's hilarious.
Next season. So many possibilities. Mm-hmm. Who knows where it will all go?
Very exciting.
But we know we've got everyone on the table ready to kick off season 11, which will premiere again sometime, probably late September, early October.
I think it'll be October. I love, did you see Carver's? Carver's nothing.
The Carver
giving us nothing.
Tease of the season 11 where he says, things go from bad to worse for the boys. Well, which is, understatement of the fucking millennium.
I actually think that's the beginning of the synopsis. That isn't that the beginning of the synopsis that CW release every year?
The Winchesters fight evil and
things go from bad to worse.
As the brothers must face their biggest enemy yet. Yes. You should get just in advance of Comic-Con, there'll be something like
that. It'll say that.
But then only 40 days until Comic-Con, 41 days until the Supernatural panel, and when we actually start to get usually teasers at the presser there, we'll get a little hint, not a lot.
And Jensen has said that he's directing the first episode again. He said that at Justin Bello, I believe, so which is episode 3. But it'll be the first shooting episode of the season, so he'll be directing again,
which is wonderful. So he's really only got 3 weeks till he's not long at all till he's back on deck.
I know.
Three, 4 weeks.
Yeah, four weeks. Yeah.
40 days. Has September? No. Yeah. No, he'll be going back just at the end of June.
Yeah, end of June. So he's got about 4 weeks.
To get ready to start shooting. So not long at all.
Oh, gosh.
The writers, of course, started back at work 2 days before the finale aired, which I thought was hilarious. It's like they're just starting on season 11 and we haven't finished watching season 10.
It's so hilarious.
It is a year-round machine.
Yep.
That never stops. So,
and certainly doesn't for us.
It never stops for us. So who knows where things are up to or will be coming. I had a message from Robbie Thompson who said season 11 is currently baking. Good times.
Bless him. Of course, we did actually hear that Adam won't be with us for season 11. He's gone off to be showrunner on a Criminal Minds spin-off.
Yes, Beyond Borders. So sad to lose Adam.
Very sad.
He's done some amazing and some favourite episodes. He, of course, you know, came up with the whole Men of Letters line storyline and named the Men of Letters. He did some great and, of course, his last episode was about a boy. Which, you know, had wonderful young Dean in it. So, and he's known for doing, he did a couple of great Winchester episodes, including the one of the flashback to Dean and his time on Sonny's farm and Bad Boys. And yeah, so.
We know he's a super fan, so I think he'll still be watching.
Oh, and he's, yes, you know.
And his son's a super fan.
And well, you know, he said himself, you know, once you're in the Supernatural family, you never get to leave. So he's still on Twitter. Of course, I'm lucky enough to get to meet him a number of times and spend some time with him. Incredibly passionate about his job and incredibly generous about the people he worked with and all the team at Supernatural, from the writers up to everyone in Vancouver as well. I just remember from the very first time I met him just being so bowled over by his passion about the show. It was really like, you know, sitting down with him and Robbie was like sitting down with a couple of fans and being, you know, arguing about, you know, our interpretation of the show and passion. I know he loved Dean Winchester hugely.
Don't we all?
And not that he didn't love the other characters as well, but I know he has a special place in his heart for Dean. And I, of course, he named a character after me, so I'll always owe you that, Adam. I know we'll keep in touch and I look forward to what horrors you will bring forth, what psycho serial killers and such have criminal minds.
I think he's pretty well positioned to be doing that show.
I did mention, of course, that, you know, Beyond Borders means you can come down and film in Australia.
Oh, my gosh, he can. And if nothing else, we need to get him out here for, like, a supernova or a Comic-Con or something.
And, you know, Australia, we're well known for psycho serial killers. So
we are. Well, Adelaide is.
Wealth of... Oh, no. Woo! Just Adelaide.
No, I know.
Wealth of true crime over here, Adam. So, look, farewell. But, you know that the Supernatural family will continue to harass and stalk you.
Yeah, they'll probably still harass you.
But he's always been particularly generous on Twitter, did lots of live tweeting, shared, shots of his board at work with episode outlines and stuff like that. So it was always loves the fandom. I know people at, particularly at VanCon over a couple of years got to meet him. He even did a panel last year at VanCon.
Was a fabulous panel. It was amazing. I was so lucky to be there for that one.
So that's sad. Don't know if there's another new writer on board yet or whether they'll just give the current Josh more to do, but I'm sure we'll hear about that as time goes on through the season. If they do have a new writer, they're probably protecting them from Twitter at the moment.
Yeah, which is not a bad idea.
They're probably like, wait till your first episode's about to air and then we might let you near Twitter.
And then, but still protect you.
We will be doing, I know we'll do a season 10 rewatch and a season 10.
We will. I started mine last night, but I was so tired I fell asleep. So I felt so bad, but I fell asleep halfway through the first episode. I was like, oh, I was a bit tired. But yes, I'm all set for my season 10 rewatch. And Jules, of course, is off to San Diego Comic-Con where she's hosting the party to end all parties.
Well, I hope it doesn't end all parties. That'd be rather sad, really.
Party to start all parties.
Carry on Wayward Cocktails. It is 10 years since the pilot aired in 2005. The pilot of Supernatural aired in July, obviously, at Comic-Con, ahead of it going a broadcast on the WB in September that year.
Which will be the 10th anniversary on the Sunday of DallasCon.
Yes, amazing timing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, it's time. There's never been an off-site other than the Supernatural panels. There's never been any other events for Supernatural, and I thought it was about time. So with my friend Heidi Tandy, who I've known from Supernatural fandom since about 2006, we're putting on a cocktail party, the Analog Bar, Carry On Wayward Cocktails. Check the front page of the Super Wiki for a link to all the ticket prices. We'll probably confirm in the next day or two that we're now taking over the whole bar.
That's
the
great.
The response has been fantastic. So we'll be able to have sort of half the bar can go wild and the other half can go wild as well, probably. There's some more announcement to come. We've got great swag bags, and we've got a wonderful sponsor in Wattpad, who are a journaling site that have lots of Supernatural fan fiction on it, and they've generously come on board to help us make this an amazing night. It's on the Thursday night of Comic-Con. You don't need a Comic-Con ticket to attend. It's just in the Gaslamp District in San Diego. So anyone, the whole of Southern California, just get a ticket and come along. 7:30 till whenever, possibly 7:30 till whenever we start queuing up for Hall H on Sunday, on Saturday afternoon for the Sunday morning panel.
You'll do a big report for us from Comic-Con.
I will. I'm not sure what sort of access I'll get to the press room or whatever. Woo! But
I think we've already discussed we're going to FaceTime with Jensen at the press. Press to me, right? I'm pretty sure we talked about that, Jules.
Yes, I'll probably be lucky if I can just get a good place in the Hall HQ. I've got a good team of friends with me, so we'll be camping out. I discussed with Ryan today. I might just do drunk podcasts from from Comic-Con of all the famous people I don't get to interview. Here's me in a bar, not with Jensen Ackles. But one way or the other, it'll be a lot of fun. There's already some great merch out there. Check out CineQuest. Mm-hmm. You can get an Impala with a Green Army Man.
That's awesome. And their latest T-shirt.
A T-shirt based on last year's WB Comic-Con bag, which was the Sam and Dean portrait done in salt. Mm-hmm. So they have a T-shirt based on that. And even if you're not there, these are Comic-Con exclusives. Even if you're not going to Comic-Con, you can pre-order them. They do a very limited number that you can pre-order even if you're not going, and you'll get sent them. So you should do that, particularly the Impala with the Green Army Man. I thought that was wonderful. Mind you, the Green Army Man's bigger than the Impala, but let's not get into minor issues of scale. Anyway, that's been us. We'll probably have a little break for a week or two, and then we'll be back with more, with cons and news and
stuff.
And season 10 reviews and lots of other stuff. Let us know, please. We love your messages on the podcast or email to us. Thank you all for listening. We had some lovely people come up at All Hell Breaks Loose last weekend telling us how much they enjoyed the podcast, and that really means a lot. I mean, Amy and I love having a beer and talking about Supernatural. But it does mean a lot that other people get some enjoyment out of our squee.
And thank you everybody who takes the time to message us on Twitter as well to tell us that you're enjoying listening to us while working out or studying or whatever you're doing.
Driving to work.
And it really means a lot to us to hear from you, and we're really excited that you enjoy listening to us rambling on about the show we love and you all love.
And we won't be stopping it any time soon.
No. Remember when this was a hiatus project in season 8? Yeah.
That's all.
Thank you. It's been a great season, and I've sure as hell have loved talking about season 10. It's been wonderful. And
I think both you and I have. And thank you, Amy, for a lovely, a wonderful season. I think we've both been on the same page of how much we've loved this season.
I think so. So we'll be back soon with more stuff, as we said, and convention reports and Comic-Con reports and our thoughts on season 10 and other things. So keep an eye out for all of that. And thank you all for listening. I've been Amy.
I'm still Jules.
And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Dean!
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.